Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants, joins us. Well, how are you this morning?
Good, Marty. Good morning to you.
You ever get a hankering to go to the rodeo?
Once in a great while, I do get a hankering to see a good rodeo. And I, last time I went was actually in Scottsdale. They have a tremendous rodeo. I know that's where Cody lives. And went up there and had a nice time. Had a nice time.
Yeah, have I ever been to a rodeo? This is a good question. I don't know.
Well, you have it right down there in Scottsdale where you live. It'd be a perfect time for you to go.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever been. As a kid, I liked cowboys. You know what I mean? I had little guns and, you know, my holster and all that stuff. Cowboy outfit, you know.
Maybe you could tell them you're coming and you can get an opportunity to ride a bull. A rope a cow.
Very good. Thank you very much. All right. Ron Wotus has joined us this morning. Taking the show. You do the show this morning.
No, thank you.
All right. Great to see you, though. And first, I want to thank you for a great year of these shows. And you know how many people talk about the professor and they love hearing you and all that stuff. And Murph just walked by waving at you. So, Allie, Carmen, you know, we love having you here, so we appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. You guys have been great. It's been a lot of fun, and I do have to say I've had an opportunity to talk to a lot more ushers this year than I normally do because I do get them stopping me quite a bit and saying, good night, Professor. See you tomorrow, Professor. So it's been nice, you know. I do get to have more conversations with them and get to know them a little bit.
Yeah, very good. Speaking of ushers, I don't want to forget about Janine. My favorite usher brought me the 5-pound apple pie.
Oh, 5 pounds.
At least. I don't know. I had to take it out in a box. So, but she does it every year, and I can't wait.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Only time I had something that big as a dessert was Joel Horland, my pitching coach, is from San Antonio, and they have a place down there. I think it's the Jailhouse Cafe, and they have a 5-pound cinnamon bun. And they served that, so we got that. There was three of us. We didn't finish it, but it's quite the dessert. So enjoy that pie.
Yeah, well, Dwayne Kuiper, when he goes to Milwaukee, doesn't he get that? What does he get?
The Kringle.
Right. Have you tried that?
Have I tried it? Don't miss it in Milwaukee. He just got in the clubhouse a few days ago, and as soon as I saw it there, I cut about half of it out and brought it into the coach's room, and I didn't share it with anybody. I had the whole darn thing. They're outstanding. It was a maple Kringle.
So
very good pastry.
It's like a donut?
It's a round pastry, you know, kind of thin. It's got some, you know, glaze on top and some maple filling and just a breakfast pastry is what it is. It's good. You can have it for dessert or you can have it in the morning with your coffee.
Very good. I didn't know you're a Kringle guy. All right. Very good. Season. You know, I talked a little bit on, you probably heard me on the way in, you know, a baseball season, and we never know what's going to happen and where it's going to go. Alan, come on in. Alan brings us donuts here.
He's one of our ushers, right? Hi, Alan. How you doing?
Very good.
Very good. He brings donuts for everybody. How sweet. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Very good. There's Tom Zorn goes by. You know, it's a family. You know that?
Yes, it is.
Isn't that funny?
It really is.
What a family it is here.
It really is. Everybody that works here, obviously, the players, I'm sure you'll get into that with Matt Cain yesterday. What a tremendous day. But it continues. The Giants are tremendous at honoring, you know, the players, past players on the field. But as you said, the ushers, the people that work here, and the fans. We can talk about them, how this season has been a real challenge and difficult for all of us. But they keep coming out. They keep coming out. We feed off their energy, and you know, I like to thank them for their support because it does make a difference. To see a day like yesterday with Matt Cain and that support, those are special moments in life. So thank you to the fans.
Yeah, well, you know what I notice? If you get in a game and all of a sudden, you know, you come back from a deficit or you get a big hit, a big home run, they cheer like it's a playoff game.
Yeah,
isn't
they
that
respond.
Amazing?
Yeah, they do. Well, they've won right along with us, and everybody loves winning. They love they love to be successful, and they love those moments. And on the flip side, it's just as disheartening when it goes the other way. But they're there for us, and Hopefully we can give them some great moments again next year.
Why not? I want to get into it with you a little bit. You and I talk in spring training, and you do a great job running that spring training and all the drills. And hey, Crawford stayed in the pickle for a while yesterday, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's what you want to do. You want to try to, well, he's trying to get out of it because there was no batter runner going. You want to stay in it so the batter runner could get to the base that you were at, but he stayed in it because he was trying to get out of it, you know, and I was just hoping that it was going to wear down a couple of their hitters. So when they went to home plate, they wouldn't have the energy to hit, but it didn't happen.
No, but I swear to God, he looked to me like a Jackie Robinson or, you know, one of those Rod Carew guys, because he was in there. It wasn't just one or two throws. It was about four throws before they got him, and they just got him.
Yeah, yeah. Great effort on his part. Obviously, he was upset about getting picked off, and you got to tip their hat to them. They saw something. They did the inside move at the right time. So he was trying to get out of that darn thing. He wasn't going to give up until he was tagged out.
What is the inside move? What is that?
Well, the inside move, they call it the spaghetti move. That's when the pitcher comes set and he lifts his leg as if he's pitching home, but then he twists around and he steps towards second base. And that's what gets a lot of good base stealers, because if you didn't have that inside move, and years ago, 20 years ago, that thing was, no one ever did it. And I don't know what year it came into play, because if that is not deceiving the runner, I don't know what is. When you lift your leg at second, you'd have to go home. But now they lift their leg, they'll come straight down, and they'll turn on the rubber, and step to second base. Really, they outlawed the first, the fake, the third, throw to first. That inside move should be outlawed. If you want to see more base stealing, that would do it, because guys don't steal, because that pitcher now, a lot of times you have to wait till he's almost delivering the ball or his leg starts going forward before you can take off.
So is that the issue, the leg going forward?
Well, yes, because if you start your weight going forward, there's no way that you can turn around and get your weight and momentum going back to second base. So he could lift his leg up. It could come up to his waist. And yeah, like Rob Nen used to do, the leg would come straight down and then go out. Well, it can come straight down and then twist around and step towards second. And the real key for the umpires is when you twist around and you step, you have to step at the base you're throwing to. So if he turned and stepped towards third, that would be a box. So he's got to get his foot directed more towards second than third.
Very good. All right, the professor in rare form. Very good on this Sunday morning. Let's talk a little bit about the season. And as I say, we stand together, and what got me on it, you run spring training, and I don't see you for 4 weeks. You know that. You're running around doing a great job of getting everybody ready with all the fundamentals and everything. But we stand around and we talk, and you never know where a season's going to go. And this is when I reviewed it before you came on today, with all the things that we saw in spring training and what happened during the year. It's hard to explain how years sometimes just get away from you.
Yeah, it is. Look, in spring training, I thought we did a great job, Bobby and his staff, of bringing in some depth. We had a lot of options. We brought in a lot of veterans, you know, the Michael Morses, the Aaron Hills. We brought in Marrero. We had our young guys. So we had a lot to pick from. We had Jimmy Rollins was in there in the spring. We had a lot to choose from. We felt like we had some depth. But, and in spring we did okay. I think towards the end of the spring we started to get a little bit of concern about the performance. But I think you summed it up. I heard a little bit driving in. We were not able to get on track. Too many underperformances. A lot of the guys we brought in did not perform, or they got hurt. You know, I mean, injuries has been a part of this thing as much as anything as well. I mean, you're always challenged on your roster to lose important pieces and to be able to fill those pieces with injuries, as Melanson was down for quite a while. But we never really got on track, and that pretty much continued through the course of the season.
Yeah, well, and again, with baseball, you know, you go through the winter and you come into spring training, and everybody's can win a World Series.
Well, that's it. You know, it's behind us after today. I think everybody's ready to try to fix the issues that we have and improve it. And that's the great thing about spring training. We'll have a fresh start, and things can go different. You know, even with the same guys, things can go different. So
look at the Twins.
Yeah, Exactly.
Come on, they're 100 losses, and they're playing this week against the Yankees.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, lots of teams have turned it around in 1 year, and that's what our expectation is.
Yeah, you
got
to pitch. You got to play great defense to begin with, and now the game has changed a little bit where you got to hit the ball out of the park. And
yeah.
That's the difference. But, you know, it's a funny thing thinking about this. You still have this park. And the way you play baseball in this park still has to be played that way. You've got to run efficiently in this park. You've got to play outfield defense efficiently in this park. This park still requires you to play that kind of baseball.
Yes, it does. You know, you'd like to be able to, you know, spend $300 to $400 million and get every player that you'd love to have. But in our ballpark, we've always won with pitching. We've played good defense and timely hitting. And that's the name of the game. We have won years with home runs. I think 10 when Cody Ross and Pat Burrell were here. The home run really came into play for us. But those guys are harder to find. You know, proven home run hitters are harder to get. They're going to cost you a lot of money. So you look at the club, you know, how we're going to rebuild this thing. You know, the guys that we have with power, the Williamsons, the Parkers, the guys that we have, the Buster Posies, for some reason it wasn't quite there. Belt was out most of the year. So we obviously want to add power. We'd love to be able to do that in offense. But you also need to improve defense, speed. Maybe we can steal more bases, you know, cover the outfield. When you get a Billy Hamilton type guy.
It's my guy.
Yeah, and your pitching, you know, your pitching improves tremendously right there. And he's saving more runs than he's driving in. And you could look at this year saying that, you know, we let in too many runs. So that's an easy way to help your pitching. Now, Billy Hamilton is, you know, already signed with another club. But if you can get a guy with speed and can do some other things, you can manage that type of player sometimes to help you win ball games.
Well said. Absolutely well said, our bench coach, Ron Wotus. The other thing is coaching in this ballpark. You have to, you know, in other ballparks with all the home runs, there's not that much pressure on coaches day to day for to score runs. This ballpark, you got to know what you're doing to score runs. It's a major part. Other places, you know, you have 220 home runs. The Mets scored 60% of their runs on home runs.
Right.
When you got to score your runs on baseball, you got to be on top of your game.
Yeah, well, when you know, typically when your offense is challenged, you got to try to create, you know, hit and run, steal, do things that if you have the personnel to do it.
Right.
And every manager is going to manage, you know, the personnel that he has. But those are the ways that you can compete with what you have. And as you said, that's a little more difficult to do at times. You can't hit and run your way into a championship, but you nudge the game along and you pick your spots to try to create. As you said, I think today, even this year, I didn't see many safety squeezes this year. The safety squeeze was a big play a couple of years ago. Everybody was doing it. I didn't see quite as many this year in our division, and probably the reason why is these guys are hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and all these clubs have improved, and they have a pretty good offense, and the teams in our division really swung the bat.
Yeah, no, very well said, but that's the postmortem on 2017, but it's clear, and I think everyone's got a good grip on it. Now you got to make it different.
Right.
Kevin Romine, the player for the Tigers, yes, they played all nine positions. And I remember going back to Campy Campanaris doing this for the old Kansas City A's. And when he was the catcher, remember a guy named Ed Kirkpatrick? Spanky Kirkpatrick?
Spanky.
Yeah, remember that?
The name sounds familiar.
Right.
Anybody named Spanky, you can't forget that.
He was a catcher for the Angels. And Campy had to be the catcher. And so when you play all nine positions, you got to catch.
Right.
So the game was on the line, and Spanky was on third, and somebody hit a fly ball and a sacrifice fly, and he put Campy into next week. You know, he just crushed him. And but Campy ended up playing all nine positions. I always remember that. So Romine did this yesterday, and it was exciting for the Tiger fans. And
right.
He got an out. He pitched a one batter, and he caught, and whatever. It was a lot of fun. And I was thinking about it. What about, have you ever coached every position as a coach on the field in one game?
You know, I can't recall that happening here. you know, or in the minor leagues. We've had versatile guys, but never tried to get him to every position. But, you know, something's in the back of my head here. If it did happen here and somebody knows, please call in, because, you know, part of me thinks that it did happen at some point in time, but I can't recall it. You know, the catching position is the one that really makes it tough, as you just mentioned. You know, you can move a utility guy all around the field, but now to put him behind the plate is a difficult thing. And you know, you're in Detroit, you're losing all these games, and it's a great PR move for the fans to do that and create a little interest. But you can put a guy at risk, as you said. Poor Spanky got really hurt there.
Campy into left field.
Yeah.
But Cesar Tovar did it.
Okay.
Scott Sheldon, Shane Halter. Those are the four that have done it. Apparently, those four have done it. So
okay, that's been it.
But I want to do it for you. I want you to coach third, first, go down to the bullpen where Guardy is. I want you to be the bench coach, and then be the hitting coach. I want you to do all those in one game. How about that?
Can I be the hitting coach when the meat of the order is coming up? Is that possible?
You could plan it.
Okay.
You could plan it that way.
Okay.
How about that? Would you do that?
No, I don't think so.
Come on, why not?
Well, it would be fun, but we're here to win games, and I don't know what kind of impact.
Let's assume you've clinched.
We've clinched.
You've clinched, like everyone does the hangover lineup. Come on, you saw that a couple of times.
I mean, you have seen a lot of crazy things. I like the idea with the player, because as a coach, I don't think the fans or anybody's going to know what the heck is going on, right? You go down to the bullpen for an inning, they're not going to know. If you go sit as a pitching coach, if you don't make them go out to the mound and talk to somebody, nobody's going to know. So I'll say this. I think there's a good chance that will never happen.
All right, I'm good. This is now my goal is to make. All right, is to get this
okay
to happen. All right, this would be fun. We would like that. Stanton sitting on 59. Don Mattingly said he's going to lead him off today to try to get him to 60. And look, I grew up with 60 and 61. Those were the numbers for me. And for you, of course, until Bonds and Sosa McGuire, you know, busted through that. But it's not easy to hit 60.
No. And he's doing it in a ballpark. It's not easy to hit him.
How about that?
And he shrinks that place. So he doesn't have 60 yet. Maybe he'll get it today. But 59 is just as good as 60 in my book. It's amazing.
I'm rooting for him.
Yes.
I really am. Ruth, I think, had 59, and then he had 60 after that. But I think he got to 59 once.
Yeah.
Carmen, Allie, did Babe Ruth ever have 59? I think he did. They're looking at each other. Come on. Someone's got to move here.
Well, Stan's one of those guys, as you mentioned, Bonds, Sosa, McGuire. I mean, McGuire and Bonds probably more so than Sosa, but, you know, that period when they were hitting those home runs, not only players would sit in the dugout to watch their batting practice to see how far the balls were being hit, but coaches would come out to look at it. You know, that's how far these guys were hitting the ball. And Mike Stanton in today's game is definitely hitting that ball the same way. So it's pretty impressive to see him doing what he's doing.
Well, he isn't. There's no steroid allegation or, you know, that whole thing. We went through that whole era for whatever you believe in. He's doing it his way.
Right.
Which is just shows you how tough it is.
Yes,
it is. He's got 59. One other one I want to mention to you before we take our break. I want you to think about some of your picks here for the playoffs, because we've all seen the teams and
sure.
I'd like to get some of your analysis of it. Joey Votto. Joey Votto, when you look at the numbers of this guy, and again, the analytics, and you're involved with this so much, what a season this guy has.
Yeah, he always has. You know, he's had a couple down years, but you look at his numbers over the course of his career, and they're tremendous, and I know a lot's been made about him not, you know, driving the ball or taking so many walks, but getting on base in this day and age is a big deal. And he still, I don't know how many home runs he has.
30-something.
He's 30-something. Yeah. He still hits the ball out of the ballpark, plays a good first base. Extremely, extremely talented player. Now, he's in a great park for him in Cincinnati, the way that ball goes to right. But, you know, he'd do it anywhere. We've seen him hit home runs out of here. He'd get on base and be a tough out. That's what he is. He's a tough out. You can't throw the ball on the plate to this guy. There's very few places you can go to get him out, and that's what makes him such a great hitter.
Yeah, I'll hit you with this one here. And MVP, Blackman, Arenado, Goldschmidt, Stanton, Where would you go?
Well, I'd probably pick a guy that's going to go to the playoffs. You know, as much as I love Stanton, I would probably go with one of the other ones. I haven't looked at their final numbers. I haven't really seen where they're at. Well, they're all tremendous players. You know, I mean, you know, Blackman's had a tremendous year. He covers that center field. He steals some bases. You know, Goldschmidt has killed us as much as anybody, along with Arenado. And Arenado really makes an impact in the game. But I think I would give the nudge to Blackman this year, because what he does in that big outfield and center field, and now Arenado, look at, he impacts the game at third as much as any third baseman or infielder in the game. But I don't know. I just think what he's done this year, and certainly Paul Goldschmidt has been the leader of that Arizona team, which has had a tremendous year coming from where they were last year.
Yeah, I'm with you on Blackman because he sets the tone. He just sets the tone, and he's a center fielder.
Yeah.
I think all year long this guy has just been unbelievable.
He really has.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I hope he wins it. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, get a couple of predictions here from the professor, and I'll talk about exit velocity and how it affects the defense. I read a whole article about this today, how hard guys hit the ball, and that tells you where you play your infield, is short, back, left field, or where you move them back to. And we'll talk to Woe about that when we come back.
Nice. Okay.
All right, nice to have you back with us. That was Carmen doing our rejoinder, and, of course, Matt Cain talking about being here in the Bay Area. Well, a couple of things here. One, exit velocity. I read this whole thing today. If guys hit the ball, they average 88 miles an hour coming off a swing, 0-2, 1-2. You got your third baseman playing in a certain place. If they hit different velocities, you're moving infielders around. Have we gotten to that point yet in analytics?
Well, not as much in the infield. I think we've always done that with your baseball knowledge and experience. For example, Hunter Pence, when he was back with Houston, you know, he hit a lot of choppers. You know, we see ground ball percentages, but pretend you don't even see ground ball percentages. You see a guy getting a lot of infield hits. You go into Houston and he'd be at the top of the league in infield hits. That tells you, you know what? You got to play shallower because he's topping the ball. You know, Pollock with two strikes, a breaking ball pitcher, he'll top the ball. So you don't want the third baseman too deep in situations like that. Now it changes. There's a man on second base. You're going to defend the infield hitter. You're going to play him as deep as possible to knock the ball down. So for me, it's always been done in the infield. Billy Hamilton comes up, you have to play double play depth. I don't need an exit velocity to tell me the speed of the runner or how hard he's hitting it. Stanton comes up, you're going to play on the outfield grass because you don't want to get hurt. So I think the gray areas in between, to know the difference between, you know, Crawford and Panic, right. I think it goes more on the speed of the runner. So we've always done that in the infield. I think there's more validity to look at it in the outfield.
Okay.
And the reason being how far they're hitting the ball. The outfield is tougher to cover. Obviously, we do it, you know, power guys, you're deeper. Guys that don't hit the ball, you're in. But I think you get a better gauge because you can move so much more in the outfield. You can move 10, 15 steps in or 20 steps back. In the infield, there's not that much variance. So we've looked at it this year. You know, our Jeremy Shelley and his staff up there has given me the outfield depths. Mark Melanson, who's big on that, he's always liked the right fielder when he's throwing a right-hander in really shallow. Because if you look at his, forget about the hitter's exit velocity and how far he hits the ball. If you look at the pitcher's, how they hit the ball off the pitcher and where the ball goes, because he's so good at making pitches.
Mm-hmm.
They don't drive the ball to right field. He throws that cutter away. It's right. More falling in front of the outfielder. So there's so many things that you can look at, and you can get bogged down with it. The real key is figuring out what's most important and what stats like this you really want to implement. And it takes a combination of the information and your baseball experience to roll with that.
And now, look, you've been doing this a long time. Has it changed that much recently?
Yes, it has. It's made the game a little more difficult. I think it's opened up for a lot more second guessing, which is a beauty of any sport. People love to do that. But it boils down the performance on the field, execution of pitches. You know, an example, yesterday that ball gets hit in a gap. We have an 0-2 count on the hitter. Do you want to put him all the way back on the track to protect for the no double? Or do you want to take away a 0-2 pitch? Shouldn't be driven. You want to play a little further in and take away a medium hit ball that could fall in for a base hit to tie the game.
Right.
And you can get arguments on both sides of that. But those types of decisions, whether to shift or not to shift, how we're pitching the guy, what the scoreboard says, will he bunt? All these stats and information are great to have, but it does not take away from your baseball experience on the field, the scoreboard, the situation of the game, and what you expect your players to do in that moment.
Boy, what a beautiful game. What a beautiful game. And the numbers help. But
they
boy,
help.
It is a beautiful game because you got to play it on the field.
You got to play it on the field. I think the numbers help a lot with certain ground ball percentages, fly ball percentage. Am I going to play a five man infield or this guy hits a lot of ground balls? He's possible hit and run candidate because he's putting the ball on the ground. But we've always had a lot of information, but not like it is today. It's brought to a new level.
Yeah, you just don't show up at the park and chew some tobacco and go out and hit a couple of fungos. You're not. It's not Salty Parker and Cookie Lavigetto and Charlie Fox and you've got quite a job.
Well put,
seriously.
Marty.
Yeah.
Well put, because it adds at least an hour or two to your day.
Yeah.
If you want to look at all this, and as I said. And it can get overwhelming, so you have to pick and choose on what you believe in and what you think is going to make the biggest impact.
Very good. I'm glad we touched on that even for the last show, to show what you got to do to work in this game today.
Yeah.
It's not just showing up and hitting a couple of fungos.
No, it is not.
Not anymore. Yeah. Wow. No. All right. Playoffs look great to me. And we'll just talk about the National League. It's going to be very exciting. I think Colorado got in yesterday. They'll play Arizona. I guess Jeff Gray will probably go against Greinke. The winner gets the Dodgers, then you get Washington and the Cubs. How about that? How do you see it? Get a couple of little predictions from you.
Okay, well, let's see. I'm going to go with Arizona in a wild card game. I just think that they have the mojo going this year. You have Greinke. It's hard to go against him. He's been pitching extremely well. Now, I haven't looked at any statistics, how his head-to-head has been. Colorado limped in at the end a little bit. The game's going to be in Arizona. So I'm going to go with Arizona in that game, Greinke over Gray. And then the next one, I'm gonna go with my heart. I'm really pulling for Dusty Baker and the Washington Nationals to finally move along and hopefully get to a World Series. Arrieta, I heard, is not pitching the game three. He hasn't been the same guy. Lester hasn't been tremendous this year. I don't know if Hendricks is going to start the first game or not. I don't know their head to head, but I'm gonna pull for Washington.
I like it.
This year. I think they're due to move along. A little of the shine has been taken off the Cubs, but the only thing you don't want to discount is they played pretty well going down the stretch. The Cubs are getting hot at
they're
the right time,
it.
And they definitely could win it. But I'm gonna pick Washington.
Their pen is a little shakier for me.
Okay.
The Cub pen is still a little
there. You
shakier.
Go. Yeah.
So what about Arizona and the Dodgers? That's the one we're all waiting for.
Yeah, well, it's I'm not going to pencil the Dodgers in.
Okay.
Arizona, again, they get through the wild card and they play well. The Dodgers have not played as well in the second half. Yeah. If Arizona has Ray starting that game, I know the Dodgers will have Kershaw.
Right.
And I think he hasn't always fared that great in the playoffs. But that you got to throw that aside. This is a different year. He's a tremendous pitcher. But Ray, but the Dodgers don't have the same lineup against left-handed pitching.
Right.
And Ray has been awfully good this year. So I think the Dodgers are going to have a lot more pressure on them than Arizona. I think that could come into play. So if they can win that first game, I could see Arizona knocking them off.
Oh, great. Oh, hey, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
It should be. I'm going to look forward to watching that wild card game. Those are always a fun game to watch on Wednesday.
Well, look, you've been through a couple of them. How about the Met game? You know, that one with Gillespie hitting the home run and Craw hitting the grand slam.
Oh, great memories. You know, I love the wild card game. Not like Clint Hurdle. He's lost two or three, right?
He
hasn't won. We were able to win him, so I really enjoy the wild card game.
All right. Beautiful. Carmen, Allie, you want to say something to Woe before he departs?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, this is like the best part of our weekend, seeing you. So we've learned so much from you. And obviously you're a great guy. You bring us coffee. We love you.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. I was going to say thank you for the coffee as well, but it's nice to just kind of start our Sunday mornings with you and listen. It's easy listening. We get to get our day off to a nice start, and it's great to be able to see you every home weekend.
Well, thank
Plus
you.
We learn a lot of ball, and I love it. I think it's the best thing we do, and I can't thank you enough for doing it. And another year down, and we now get ready for next year, and who knows where it's going to go. What's your winter like, by the way?
See the family, take a couple trips back east to see my family and my wife's family. You know, that's first and foremost, first order of business. And we'll decompress a little bit and trying to, you know.
No Italy here? No?
No, not out of the country. We always go to Hawaii in January and try to swim with the whales. I don't know if you've ever done that.
Oh, you played there.
Yeah, I know Hawaii's a special place. I played there, and Lori and I met in Hawaii.
That's correct.
That's where we met.
Lori was selling jewelry, right?
Yeah, it's a great time of year, January, to go, and it's a very, very nice place to relax, Marty. You know, you can put the work aside, and you can get away. You're stuck on an island, and I just wish there was no cell phone service over there. They still have cell phone service at that island.
All right, well, thank you so much. We love you, and have a great winter, and we'll catch up.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, Marty. Enjoyed it.
All right, more coming up, KMBR 680, the sports leader.